Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game. Hi, Mikey.
Hi, Lily. How are you today?
Eh.
I know. Allergy season, huh?
Anyway, I don't want to complain. Maybe another episode I will. Anyway, why don't you introduce our guest, Mike?
Okay. Well, as always, we have a very special guest today. But this one is particularly special because this is someone who happens to be a friend of your cousin, Leah, and that's how we found him.
Yes.
Out of the blue, there is a fascinating person to talk to, someone who is currently the sheriff of Tom Green County in Texas, who has a history of dealing with the fundamentalist branch, I guess, of the Mormon Church, under Warren Jeffs and his family.
Yeah.
Welcome today to Sheriff Nick Hanna.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for being with us. How do you know my cousin?
Well, I never believed that he was actually your cousin in phone call the other day. we had my kids and his kids went to the same school. And so we would always run into each other at football games and basketball games. And a lot of times I was a dad up there and he was a dad up there. And we just kind of ended up sitting by each other and struck up a friendship. And I guess it's been maybe 12, 15 years now. We've remained in close touch. He lives down in Fredericksburg, which is about 2.5 hours away. But, we just established a friendship and we kept it going. So started with the kids.
Yes, and he wrote me and he said, listening to your podcast, you should talk to my buddy. And I was like, because, every cousin has a friend, has a buddy. And you're like, why should I talk to your friend?
Right.
So I didn't know you were real until he's like, well, look, he's a real guy. Here's the story. And I was like, oh, okay. So thank you to my cousin for introducing us.
Now and, we believe you.
Yeah, now we believe that. Now I believe you, Joe.
Joe's doing good today.
Anyway, so so thank you, Joseph, for connecting us. And the story is pretty amazing. I mean, in our last podcast, Mike, when we touched on the Mormons, again, we for years since the aftermath, people have reached out to us and said, do this. Do this. So I'm glad that it's come to us in a very authentic way. But for those who don't know, I'm going to let Sheriff Hanna explain this to you because, listen, this is new to us. Okay. So could you explain to us the history of the FLDS Church?
Well,
and how it came to Texas specifically?
I can. It all started with Joseph Smith.
Okay.
Back in the 1820s, 1823. And I think he received the golden plates up in Western New York, what he claimed was the golden plates. And I'll add that about the same time in the 1820s, that's the same time that the Texas Rangers were starting.
Mm-hmm.
They're the oldest organization in law enforcement organization in North America. And so, oddly enough, the two would cross paths in 2008. About a century later. In the LDS tenets, polygamy is a belief that they believe helps them attain status in heaven, the number of wives.
And where does that come from? Where does that belief come from? The Bible?
No,
I'm being sarcastic.
Well, yeah. The three books in Mormonism. You have, they have the Bible, they have the Book of Mormon, they have the Pearl of Great Price, and the third one is, Doctrines and Covenants.
Okay.
So, Joseph Smith, as the prophet, he recognized himself that men can become like gods.
Huh.
And of course, Mormonism is based, I don't want to cover topics you already know, but.
Believe me, it's not a topic I know or understand or agree with.
Right. Well, Christianity is the fundamental belief is you are saved by grace through Jesus Christ. And in Mormonism, they have some commonalities with Christianity, but they don't believe you're just saved by grace. They believe that works, that you're saved through your works. And so polygamy being, I believe, part of those works. Well, when Utah was looking at statehood, polygamy was a problem with becoming the United States. The United States, being a Christian nation, did not believe in polygamy. And so Utah and the LDS Church, they stood back from polygamy. Uh-huh. However, there was a group, the FLDS, that wanted to maintain polygamy as a tenet of their Mormon.
I see. So it's LDS and FLDS.
Yes.
Yeah, the fundamentalist church of the Latter-day Saints.
And we're you know, their standard was, hey, we're standing on what they believe to be God's law rather than man's law. And so they split. Well, Utah became a state. And as you may have noticed, just last week, I think they reduced some of those penalties for polygamy in Utah, where now it's just a misdemeanor.
Polygamy, you know, in regards to polygamy, or because I guess I'm associating this, and maybe wrongfully so, and I could be, please correct me if I'm wrong, Mike and Nick, but I equate this to children. I mean, this, are we talking about marrying children?
Yes. Well, ultimately, the
because we're not talking about, you know, hey, I want to marry a 35-year-old and I want to marry a 40-year-old and, you know, we're going to split up the chores.
Technically, Leah, the term polygamy is actually referring to being married to more than one person at a time.
Right.
But I'll let Nick talk about this, but ultimately what happens in these FLDS operations is that the idea of having many wives seems to almost always translate into, and they become younger and younger and younger, down to the age of, you know, like 12 or 13 or something.
But that's not
what he's talking about as being... That just becomes a misdemeanor. That's still statutory rape, no matter where you are.
Exactly.
Am I correct, Nick?
What you will have is you'll have willing adults in Utah engage in that.
Right.
Redefining marriage. What the FLDS community had was they had their members were from the crib, from the cradle. They didn't bring in members from the outside to join the FLDS. There was no evangelism. It was only within the confines of the FLDS community. And so you can see the numbers really didn't work. And so whether it's a combination of a lack of options or the fact that, as I believe, Warren Jess was a pedophile, the wives started gradually getting younger and younger.
Well, I don't think that's just your belief, Nick. I think that that's just a fact.
Right. And so he would pull wives from all over, young wives, and frequently he would, you know, they treated them like cattle. He would take a young wife from a father, and he would reassign him a young bride himself. And so it was tit for tat. And so it kind of eliminated any opposing arguments from the father when the father himself received a young bride. Now, those fathers, some of them I talked to, they said, hey, I would never consummate this marriage until she was of age. However, you know, we know through our convictions down here in the state of Texas that Warren did. He was sexually active with his young brides. His youngest, Mary Ann, she was 3 weeks past her 12th birthday when she was married to Warren. And I think she was, you know, he had 84 wives at the time of his trial. Right. I used to laugh and I would tell Warren when we were sitting together, I said, Warren, I know your wives better than you do.
Right, right.
And, he never would engage in any humor like that. But that was a part of the manipulation within that FLDS community, or you know, it was fenced. It had a cult like environment. It was virtually impossible. And if you've done any research, you know, there have been a few ladies who have escaped and got out of it, but it was very, very difficult. And they made it very difficult for young ladies to get out of that environment. So it was a culture of abuse. It really was.
Sure. I mean, we're aware of it because similar things go on in other cults as well in Scientology. You don't have the parents because they're fully indoctrinated and sharing these beliefs, like you're talking about the fathers who were given, you know, giving up their own daughters, but what they were making sure, you know, just so everybody knows, you know, I'm not going to consummate the marriage, but had no problem giving up his own child to what sure. he knew was going to happen inevitably. Yes. And you know, so we're very aware of this kind of mentality and why they're not reporting, why they, and they're probably very similar too, very reluctant to speak to trust law enforcement, right? They're not going to report themselves.
Well, yes, they law enforcement had been portrayed to them since early childhood sure. as the enemy, and that we would come and, you know,
same, yeah,
guns and tanks and you know, tell them lies and take them away. And so, and a lot of things he would anticipate events happen and prophesize them ahead of time in order to gain a cachet with his people.
Right.
One thing he would do is he would take these young girls to Las Vegas, and they would dress in kind of long skirts with the hair up, completely out of their element. And he would introduce them into the streets of Las Vegas. Well, you and I would never take our 13-year-old daughter to Las Vegas and leave them alone in that environment. Well, these young girls coming from a very protected environment would be dropped into the center of that situation like that. And to them, they believed that was the real world and that it was engaged in sin and, you know, all
so the purpose things. The purpose of that was to show them, to say, look how dangerous this world is.
Yes.
Okay.
If you were 13 years old and never seen a radio or watched a movie or been exposed to the outside, and that was your exposure, you would be terrified. It was a form of manipulation.
Right, right. He didn't bring them to a place where it was calm and beautiful and serene, seeing families, seeing, you know, healthy relationships and healthy families and a real church or whatever. But how did it get from, I'm a little bit confused, so just explain this to me, the part where it went from Utah to Texas.
Warren relocated back when the Olympics was going to happen in Salt Lake City in Utah. Uh-huh. Warren relocated because he predicted the end of the world. And so they relocated to Colorado City and Arizona and Hilldale, Utah. They're border cities. They're twin cities on the border.
Okay.
It's also known as Short Creek in the FLDS community. So he located there and began practicing polygamy there. And since they had the offshoot, his father was the prophet before him. And so he inherited the mantle of the prophet, which was God's mouthpiece on earth. Very powerful. What he said went. Who would question God when you're given an order? If he had trouble with an individual, he would send them to repent from afar, but require that they send him the fruits of their labors. And so they would send him their checks and the sweat of their brow and just subside on relatively nothing. Mm-hmm. So he would get their income, but the problems they posed would be gone with them. They'd be in Tennessee or somewhere doing some labor. And so they were stationed there for a period of years. And then he got into trouble with his first complaint of a sexual assault. And at that time, I think he started being uncomfortable and started looking for another land to come to. And he called this one. So they went searching. They found this ranch called the YFC Ranch, 1,681 acres here in Texas. They bought it as a hunting retreat. And they moved in about 2003, and they began construction immediately. And they built a self-sustaining community out there in the middle of Slicker County.
Where do they get this money? Where are they getting this money?
Well, as a group, they were very industrious, the FLDS community. We're talking about some very hardworking individuals. You remember the works to get into heaven is what you do? Mm-hmm. They took it literally. They would work 18, 19, 20 hours a day. They had their own companies. They had a company called HydroPack, which had contracts with NASA. They had government contracts. They owned truck stops. They were formidable business people. And they had great laborers. And why do they have great laborers? They were doing their works here on Earth. All the income they paid these individuals, they paid their workers, came right back to them. There was really, they worked a lot of young children. They weren't under the oversight of child labor laws. So they had their own kingdom. The stars really aligned for them for money to pour in. And we identified millions of dollars that flowed into the FLDS.
Wow. Now, the works usually would, to me, would imply the work that you do as that is charitable, that is giving, right? I mean, that is what the Bible is based on, is it's not, so we're not saying the works as it would be defined in, Christian Bible or Catholic Bible, right?
Well, and from
the works literally mean work your ass off to pay for me to be a sick bastard.
You and I understand that, but a 19-year-old FLDS young male who's been recently kicked out and told, hey, you need to go work and send your tithes and offerings back to the church. They would interpret that the way that Warren wanted them to interpret it, which would be to his financial benefit.
Gotcha. Okay. So they're building this compound in Texas.
They did. They did. They built the compound, and that was where the best of the best would come. It was the chosen. It was God's people. And that was going to be where, if the Lord came back, all the Mormons would gather on earth back at this area at the YFC ranch. And that's why he built a big, huge amphitheater, concrete amphitheater there, where all the world's leaders would gather, and he would ascend in front of them and give his edicts and essentially control the world.
But the Mormons were not even down with the FLDS part, right? Like, that's a section that broke off from the mainstream Mormons, right?
That's correct. That's
because
correct.
Mormons were like not down with this going down, right? They were like, no, thank you.
You know, I don't want to offend any Mormons, but I'll tell you this, in my opinion, they were passive, if anything.
Right,
they weren't
about it.
They weren't for it, but we weren't getting a whole lot of vocal support from them either.
Okay, got you. All right, so they're building
Nick, can I just ask a question? Why this El Dorado, Texas? Do you have any idea other than its remoteness? Was there some property that was particularly attractive or what?
I do. I think it was a combination of things. Warren, of course, says in his proclamations that that's where the Lord led him. I think it was the price of land, which was, you know, was relatively expensive, but to them it wasn't. The remoteness, the lack of oversight for their construction, and then limited law enforcement. Any remote area would not have a lot of law enforcement, and that sheriff's office probably has, I don't know, 8 or 9 deputies. So the ability to operate without oversight in their construction and their day-to-day affairs, I think that was the prime reason. And some people speculate it may have something to do with the close proximity to Mexico, about 2 hours north of Mexico.
Right. Okay.
Similar, Mike, to what L. Ron Hubbard did, right?
Exactly.
With gold, right? Where the compound was in a place, because even now, today, that sheriff's location has like 4 people in it.
Right. Yeah. It's these remote locations or locations that are not easily accessible.
Yeah.
Serve a couple of purposes. I mean, Nick just mentioned one, which is the outside intrusion.
Sure.
You know, you don't, the building inspectors, the sheriff's department, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But there's also the issue of, how do people, if they want to leave, how do they get away?
Sure.
And when you're very remote, it makes it that much more difficult to even physically get away if you've broken free mentally. But, the similarities here are crazy, because we also, you know, I know that at these FLDS compounds, they had their own private security forces that would go around patrolling and keeping track of people and watching out for outsiders and that sort of stuff, just like you see at Golden Era Productions with Scientology.
Right.
So,
and still today with the Sea Organization, of children of Scientology parents are not going to say, I'm not making sure my kid is not working from 8 a.m. till midnight. I'm not calling Child Protective Services on myself. I'm not, my kid's not getting schooled. My kid was molested. You know, they're not reporting what they're doing because they're protecting their church.
Right. And working, more than, and children or young adults working 18 hours a day and not sleeping, etc., etc., for the benefit of Scientology as a Sea Org member is considered to be a huge plus for Scientology families. Like I imagine the same thing happens with these people in the FLDS compounds.
Right.
They believe that they are doing God's work. They believe that they are accomplishing something that is going to save mankind.
Yeah.
Like, so the similarities are somewhat scary, frankly.
Yes.
I think what really opened my eyes the most was the lack of the outside world's involvement in their day-to-day life and the isolation of the members. And when you look at all these little steps, it's all part of a big pattern for controlling large groups of people. You control a narrative. You control their behavior. You limit the opposition. There is no room for opposition. And if there is, it's dealt with swiftly. Warren would remove families. There are stories about men who would come home to find that their families, wives, and children had been reassigned to another man. Wow. So who wants to come home and find your wife and child assigned to the neighbor down the street? Right. And you got your bus ticket to go do a job in Kokomo, Florida or something, you know?
Right.
yeah, it's the ultimate trump card.
I have a question. There was a time when, you know, I was asking certain departments, certain police departments, certain sheriff's departments, why is there not education when it comes to law enforcement with how to deal with cults? And not to mention, you know, so the quick answer to that was, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, basically we were told the last thing these sheriffs want to do or these police officers want to do is more schooling, more classes, more, you know, they put, and this part I totally understand. They put their lives on the line every day. And I get that part, but certainly there needs to be some discussion happening with the authorities from people who have been through it, people who are educated on cults, on how to deal with people from cults. Because like you said, they're conditioned to hate you. They're conditioned to believe that you're the enemy. They're apt to lie to you to justify and what they've been indoctrinated into. I mean, some of them are not even lying. They truly believe that you mean them harm. But there's no education. Children in cults are not taught. This is where people are not supposed to touch you. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's a family. I remember having this very uncomfortable conversation with my own daughter. And I said, where your bathing suit is, no one should be touching you.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, who? I was like, anybody. Anybody.
Right.
Maybe the doctor when I'm there. Right. Sure. But she's like, who do you mean? I said, anybody, baby. Grandma, grandpa, daddy. It doesn't matter. I just gave examples like that, and she was like, why? She goes, why would grandma touch me there? Like, well, you shouldn't touch you there. I'm just saying, you know. And as she got older, I had to have that conversation. This does happen. This is you know, awful truths that you need to know. And I know this conversation is uncomfortable to some. This conversation could be triggering what we're talking about. But, you know, we have to protect our children. But how do we get into these compounds to have those conversations? Mike, you never heard the word pedophile growing up in Scientology. You never were told that, Mike, as a young boy in Scientology, that no one should be touching your body. No one should be physically abusing you. I wasn't taught that. I wasn't taught that it's not okay. I was taught the opposite. It is okay. Mm-hmm. And you just need to deal with it, which is very different, different than what's going on here in the FLDS Church, where this is, you know, well, part of their quote-unquote
taught as part of a
service to God, right?
A religious experience. It's like going to communion or church covenant. Their charter.
But Nick, is there nothing that law enforcement can do? Just like, hey, we come in, we talk to cults. Well, we don't call it a cult.
You don't get access.
But isn't that insane? I mean, people ask this to us all the time. Why not just go get your daughter? Why not just go get your son? You can't just walk up on a private property, right? You need a warrant.
No, we would have never had access to the FDS ranch. We had a warrant where we had a outcry for help, which is the first kind of break in the case.
Tell me about that. What happened? What was the break?
Well, like you said, that community is closed. Right. They wouldn't even have a conversation with somebody from outside the FLDS community. So the opportunity to intervene or to outreach in that community, it doesn't happen.
Right.
The way we were involved is we received a call from a hotline here, a women's hotline. Uh-huh. And the caller claimed that she was a young girl and being held on the FLDS ranch in Slocker County, was a victim of sexual assault. She said her name was Sarah Barlow. Okay. She was 15 and that she already had a child to a older FLDS member. And she provided the name of Dale. So in order to corroborate that, we didn't have a whole lot.
Right. How do you corroborate that?
We did find a Dale Barlow that was coincidentally a registered sex offender in Arizona.
Okay.
She described living conditions at the YFC ranch very acutely and gave a large amount of details. The phone number from which the call originated was consistent with what we had seen the few times that we had reached out to them and talked to them. They did have a spokesman that would communicate with us, the bishop. His name was Raymond Merrill Bishop, Raymond Merrill Jessup. He was later also convicted for allowing his daughter to be married in an underage marriage.
Right.
But, you know, we as law enforcement, when somebody calls for help and we have facts and circumstances that align with what we know to be true, then we're duty bound to go in and help, especially a young girl proclaiming sexual assault. And so we obtained a search warrant to go search that premises, which was, I think about 1,800 acres for this girl, Sarah Barlow.
Okay.
And so we went in looking for Sarah and had lawful authority to be there. And once we were there, we started seeing signs and indications that of underage sexual assaults against younger girls. And mainly that was as simple as seeing very young girls who had young children with them, you know, 1, 2, 3 year old babies with 14, 15 year old girls. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And we pretty quickly were able to put family groups together. And so we did that and identified some potential suspects. We got DNA search warrants for a number of individuals. And that's really how it began. Not one time did an FLDS member come and testify at any of our trials. I've never really even been at a trial where the victim didn't testify, but we had 13 of them here in Texas. Then we had a few in Canada. Yeah. We had some trials up in British Columbia for those sending the underage girls across international lines for the purpose of sexual abuse. Wow. So we have some convictions in British Columbia, Canada.
Right.
That's how that all started.
Did you ever find Sarah?
Well, we didn't find Sarah, but we did find some medical records with her name on them, which further made us believe that she had been there. Right. It was later found out we don't believe the call was authentic. It was a legitimate call.
It was a legitimate call, but it was not that. It was somebody was calling to alert you to get in there. Yeah,
we identified the caller, and she turned out to be. She had a history of making bad 911 calls and calling the police. And so she had probably done her research in this area in order to stimulate the search warrant. But
well, she used her she used this time for good.
Well,
right? Yeah,
I guess that was God's hand. It did work out.
Exactly. Right.
And,
right.
You know, it met a lot of resistance in court. The search warrant had a lot of challenges, but you know, we acted in good faith. We had good probable cause when we went in there.
Right.
Right. The offenses were in plain view, and we did it, and the Rangers did their due diligence in the investigation. And if you remember, it was a, it was about a 7 day, we were there for about seven straight days on the compound, on the ranch.
Right.
A bunch of children were taken by CPS, and it was on, you know, I think it was on Nancy Grace for 30 straight days or something.
Yeah, yeah.
There were a lot of eyes on that situation, and a lot of stress associated with it.
Yeah, and I remember being shocked, and I don't know if this is the same story or this was another, I think it is the same story, but I remember being shocked at the, some of the children were sent back. Was that?
Well, they were. Yeah, they were ultimately sent back. I think initially the boys were sent back, and then over a period of time, some of the girls were sent back.
Why?
Well, the threshold is just that high, Leah, for taking children. I mean, we don't want to take children under any circumstance.
But there's certainly situations where you should.
Right.
And this is one of them.
Well, this was one of them, yes. Uh-huh. The threshold is just that high. We were overwhelmed with such a large number of cases. You know, the Texas Rangers and we were working independently. We're not independently, but we were working the criminal investigations while the Texas Child Protecting Services, that's a civil entity, they were doing their investigations. And it was just such a large number of kids. You can imagine we had just a few investigators, and I think over maybe 240 some odd kids were taken.
Right.
And so just load management was the issue, and lots of resources were mobilized. We received our indictments within just a few months, at least the initial indictments.
Yeah.
But to show the level of threat towards a child, was such a, had such a weight to it that CPS couldn't meet that weight in each and every individual circumstance, because some of the circumstances, you could not really articulate a threat other than they're living in this community. Well, hey, the world is full of dangerous communities. So we have to be able to articulate specific threats of possible sexual assault for those kids to be removed. So a lot of them were sent back. But, you know, what we feel good about as Rangers and investigators is that every case we filed, we had guilty, was taken to court, and all but one, they were all found guilty. And the one that wasn't taken to court, he pled guilty.
Right.
So they were all guilty verdicts as a result of this investigation. And then, you know, our evidence led us to Canada, where I worked with the RCMP. And we had a number of cases up in Bountiful, the Bountiful area, Bountiful, British Columbia, where we did cases for polygamy and sending underage girls across international lines for the purpose of sexual abuse for those cases. So really, you know, really was an opportunity right here in the middle of nowhere to break an entire culture.
Yes.
Of sexual abuse within a religious community.
No, it's amazing. Right. It's a huge accomplishment. We haven't been able to make any inroads into our cult to help the children of this cult. But really great job that you did, and the Rangers did, and the sheriffs did. And
yeah,
really.
Well, the Attorney General's office, the Texas Attorney General's office, did a fantastic job also prosecuting it. You know, Governor Abbott actually did on our first trial, he did our voir dire during the briefing of some of the potential jurors. And so that was a neat experience to have the acting attorney general then come in and do a voir dire on one of your criminal cases. So that was a neat, kind of a neat side note.
What is that?
Wow.
Well, it's like voir dire. Uh-huh. It may be pronounced voir dire. It's like when prosecutors.
You can pronounce it any way you like.
You're the sheriff.
I just love your accent. So anything
so
you say, I'm just like, great. Well,
yeah.
I have a little bit of a cold, so sorry. But it's the questioning of potential jurors when you're seeking their positions and their perspectives about, you know, will they be prejudiced in this trial, and can they serve objectively as a juror?
Sure.
It's part of that process. And so he came down and, you know, during that first trial, and it was a neat, you know, kind of a neat experience to have him there. And then Eric Nichols was the lead prosecutor for the majority of the cases. And he was a right man. You know, he was kind of like God ordained, I think, to manage that much evidence and do it in a way that was digestible to not when I say uneducated jurors, I don't mean a lack of intelligence on their part. I mean to jurors who had absolutely no idea that this kind of thing happened.
Right.
You know, and I'm as bad as anybody. I have to focus on what I've got going on, and I'm not aware of what's going on in other, you know, other parts of the world because I can barely handle what I've got.
Right. Understood. Right. And now this resulted in convictions, right? And so,
yes,
you want to talk about that?
Yeah, there are people.
Before you do, Nick, I just want to clarify something that you said before. Am I correct in hearing you say that not a single member of the FLDS or any of the victims testified for the prosecution?
That is correct. Not one member testified for the prosecution. We relied on some records that we had found called the priesthood records. And they provided us a roadmap that we were able to corroborate the details within the records with known events to establish the veracity of those records. And so when we coupled those with our DNA results, and then we found things like family photo albums and pictures, we just found it's like walking through a garden and making a salad. We just looked until we found something that would work, you know, here, there, and everywhere. And so we put together all these facts into a web of truths. And that's what we used in our cases. So Warren Jeffs did have an FLDS member come and testify on his behalf at his trial.
Wow. Yeah. Well, see, this is another thing that I think people really don't understand about the relationship between law enforcement and these sort of organizations. Like you said, Nick, you are perceived as the enemy. You are Satan's messengers coming to destroy the good works of God. You are all bad. And there is nothing that you can do that persuades these people that there is any goodness in what you're attempting to accomplish at all.
In their education, they didn't learn education like you or I or Leah.
Oh, no, we didn't get an education either.
Right. Yeah.
We got the same education. And I know what you're about to say. We were taught at a very young age the teachings of Scientology.
Yes.
Is law enforcement is evil.
Yes.
They are part of the big picture of destroying mankind. You are connected to the psychs, who are the top killers of mankind throughout history and beyond many lifetimes. And, you know, we're taught, we're drilled even on how to lie to you should you ever show up.
That's exactly right.
Yes, exactly.
And Mike, they were.
Yeah. And we have. And Mike has.
Yes. We found cell phone communications from the mothers when they were separated, communicating them, telling them, do not cooperate and act badly and be a problem. We found those kind of messages frequently. One interesting thing is we went back to the ranch a few years later, 3 or 4 years later. They had reoccupied it, and then the state seized it, and so they had to leave again. And so after they left, I took some a district judge and some others. I even took my family out there because I'd invested so much time and effort out there and been absent from home. I felt they deserved a tour of the facility out there. Of the YFC ranch, including the temple, huge temple, beautiful temple, 3 stories, four actually, if you count the basement. While we were going through one of the school rooms, my wife found a homework assignment in which I was mentioned in the homework assignment where they talked about the things we had done in the investigation. And I thought to myself,
what?
What did it say? Feeling to see your name in a homework assignment.
Yes.
In that manner.
What did it say?
Oh, it talked about, we had served some search warrants or civil papers. We'd go to the gate and they wouldn't respond. And so what we would do is we would wrap them on the gated community. We'd wrap them on the bars and I would photograph them. That way I could show in court I made a due and diligent effort to serve these subpoenas.
Right.
And so they would remain taped on the bars. And so we took those photographs. And so that's what she was referring to were those subpoenas where we were looking for people, looking for witnesses. Because obviously, if we hadn't made an attempt to summon FLDS members and FLDS witnesses, that would be presented as us not doing a thorough investigation.
Right.
And yeah. we did, you know, we wanted them to come forward. We made every reasonable effort to find them.
Was it shocking to you, Sheriff, to not have anybody represent themselves in court or their children, or was that shocking to you?
Well, Leah, not after the first month, not after I started understanding the culture that they were raised in and the education that, you know, they only knew what they had been told.
Sure.
And pretty quickly, I realized that that was not going to be uncommon, and really it wasn't their fault either. I didn't hold any grudge against them for not doing sure. that. They were only doing what they thought was right, and what they thought was right in the eyes of God, which was,
sure.
you know, one, yes.
Quote, so, yes, yes, yes.
So to answer your question, initially, yes, but yeah. later on, no, I expected it.
Right.
This is the exact point about the education of law enforcement and
exactly
and prosecutors to understanding what it is that they're dealing with, because when they don't understand, they don't. It's like two different worlds colliding, and right. they don't work out very well very often, and you go. You see, from one side of this equation is the tragedy of Waco, and the other side of the equation is the tragedy of people getting away with abusing people, and law enforcement being so worried or so concerned about trampling religious rights that they do nothing.
Right.
And I gotta say, I my hat is off to you for having prosecuted something like this without any corroborating witnesses, because
huge.
This is what every law enforcement official that I have ever spoken to about seeking to do something about Scientology is worried about. Where's the evidence? Where's the corroborating witnesses? Where's someone coming forward willing to testify about this within the statute of limitations? And I always say to them, you're not going to get it. That isn't going to happen. You need the documents. The yep. documents will do it. This is how the U.S. government prosecuted Scientology once successfully, by getting the documents in yep. a raid that was based on a similar circumstance to what you're saying. Someone that came forward and said, I've been kidnapped. I'm being held against my will. And that allowed law enforcement to go forward with a search warrants and gathering then the evidence. And they prosecuted based on the documents, not on the testimony of anyone.
That's right. You have to have a way to establish that those documents are true and correct. Mm-hmm. And whether that's weather, or we use weather, sporting events, traffic tickets, amazing. Whatever we can think of. We use those things to establish the credibility of those documents. And one stroke of luck, I guess we had some fortune in this big conglomerate of an investigation. We went in on April the 3rd, 2008, and we left on April the 9th, 2008. So we were on this ranch for nearly 7 days in the Temple Annex vault. So these records were kept in such a manner that belied their importance. They were in a vault. In a temple, we had to force our way in. We literally had to drill a hole through it and crawl through a wall, a concrete wall that's about 18 inches thick. And so, and the reason we did that was because Sarah Barlow could have been in that room.
Right.
Right.
When we went in there and found the records, we quickly realized, number one, they were voluminous. It was about 7 terabytes of information. So as we started triaging those records and going through them, we started finding these family group records and priesthood records, and we found these records. What we did not know until just a couple years later is those records had just arrived by a matter of days to the FLDS ranch. So had we went in before those records arrived, I don't think our results would not have been the same. And again, whether it's divine intervention or just good old, you know, sometimes it's hard work and, you know, you make your own luck. I don't know, right. But it worked out. We had the records. We made the cases. I've since talked to some former FLDS members, and it's very interesting their perspective, because they perceived us as a devil initially. Sure. Yeah. And years later, once they're out of it, you know, Carolyn Jessup, Becky Musser, some of those survivors, they have books out. To hear them reflect on what they believed then and what they know now is truth. They're very grateful to the law enforcement community in Texas that they stood up and did it. And you know, it was the Texas Department of Public Safety and the Rangers and the AG's office. So it was, you know, it was a team effort. It was, I was kind of in the point, but it certainly wasn't all me. It was, I had a lot of help and a lot of good people.
Yeah. It's a team effort. And, you know, God bless you guys for saving those that you did. And, it's no longer there, correct?
Well, the ranch is no longer there. It's been seized. The state of Texas seized it because felony criminal activity was occurring on it. So we seized it. And right now it's a law enforcement military training area. We do some training out there for our SWAT teams and our hostage negotiation teams and some other training. They refer to it as, I think it's called BTG Ranch, which means bad to good. Is what they were telling
That's
me.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's kind of fun to go out there and walk the streets of that community. And it's very surreal to know, you know, they had an orchard, they had a wonderful garden, they had their own dairy, their own stock rooms. You know, we would refer to these buildings, you know, well, that's the Walmart and that's the Lowe's. And, you know, it would help you remember what these structures were used for. And so it was really a very challenging experience, definitely that my career case, but also a very cool experience that you can look back and you think, hey, you know, we
did some good. Yeah.
Whether the stars are aligned or what, but we did impact that community. Now, just because the ranch is not there, the FLDS community still exists. They're still under the direction of Warren Jess, even though he's in prison right here in Texas. Right. And so it's a little different. They have a few areas across the United States where they gather, but not in our backyard here in Texas now.
Well, thank God. Thank you for all that you do. Really, it's an amazing story. We love hearing stories like this because it's what, Mike?
Yeah, we do.
No, we do. Because, like, because to me,
it's right. The right thing happened.
Yes.
The right thing people happened. Did the right thing and the right result came about. And
I think about those children and the freedom that they hopefully receive from, you know, even if it was one, it was worth, you know, giving that child, that little girl a shot at life, you know, and not being raped and molested, which is what her life is and would be. And so to me, saving one was worth it.
I think
that you did that, and all of you, the whole team, you should be proud.
Well, we can't. I think law enforcement is right now is they're on their heels so much. Is it when we have a challenge, we can't be afraid of opposition because that comes with it. Is the bigger the challenge, the bigger the opposition. Right. And really and truly, we didn't know how big the opposition was going to be. We didn't realize how big the challenge was going to be the day we lined up outside that fence.
Sure.
But you know, once we started it, there was no going back. You couldn't go back and unsee what you have seen.
Right.
And
well, I wish we had a Sheriff Nick Hanna on the job with Scientology. The problem with us, Mike, I think, is they do know what's ahead of them.
Right.
And you know, they're like, no, thank you.
Well, yeah.
We got a lot of other things that are a little easier to tackle than this, and will take less resources, less time, less money.
Yes, same less with the pain. IRS. The IRS, you know, they're like, no, let's go after this guy working 10 jobs who owes us, you know, $500. Let's screw his life up.
Yeah. Sorry. That can be frustrating.
Sorry, Nick. You don't need to hear this. You're
no, guy. No. It's totally.
You don't need to hear me bitching.
I gotta tell you, Leah, it's so nice to talk to like a genuine hero.
Yes.
Someone who does and has done what we always hope people in that position will do.
Sure.
Well, yeah, you're going to make
did it. I just want to thank you, Nick. I mean, we've never met before. I don't know you from a bar of soap, except for now. I feel like I know a true hero, someone who stood for what law enforcement and the right thing to do is. And I can't thank you enough for having done that and setting an example for so many others.
I'm sure he's going to say he's not a hero and he doesn't deserve this praise. We get it, Nick. We get it. We know that it's a whole department. We know it's the Rangers. We know it's the Attorney General's office. We know it was a lot of good people doing a lot of good things.
We're talking to you.
Well, thanks.
And so on behalf of all of them, right, I understand that it's a team effort and there are good people in the world and there is good law enforcement and there are a lot of good guys, a lot of good women out there doing that job every day. And
there are.
They deserve thanks. And we thank you and law enforcement for what you do. And I hope that one day we will have a Nick Hanna on our team and we can save some Scientology kids. And, you know, the same with the FLDS Church and cults like it. You know, it's not just about us, you know, this is awful. It goes on every day. It goes on in households every day. And it's an unfortunate truth and evil of life. And the reason I think, Mike, you're really happy to do this story is because we hear so much of the bad, right?
Yes.
We hear so much of the bad. We get it every day. We hear it every day, as do you, Nick. And law enforcement have to deal with the ugliness of humanity. But at the same time, there is so much good in the world, so many good people, so many good men and women wanting to do the right thing. And we just need to once in a while focus on that. So, you know, we could all just do our part by, you know, being kind and knowing the difference between right and wrong. And just being a decent human being and doing the best we can. Anyway, thank you guys. Nick, I cannot thank. So, Nick, did you want to say something?
No, I don't have
anything. Please do.
Oh, well, you know, I think you just, you know, you identify the problem, you gather information, and you make a plan. And I don't know what your fight is or what your obstacle is. I'm glad to look at them if you've got them and give you ideas. I always think there's a way.
Yes.
If you're really willing to work at it, that it can be done.
We've been working at it, Nick, and we'd love to talk to you offline about it.
Okay, yeah.
Because anytime anybody offers us some help, we're like, yes, please.
Well, I think you guys have a good mission. I can't say that I follow it because I've got my own plate full here, but I'm glad to help. I'm glad to come teach law enforcement anywhere if they want to talk about it or get a perspective about how to address these kind of cases. I'm glad to do that. I've done that several times, several places over the state. And so we go wherever we're needed.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And God bless you and your department. And we're gonna take you up on that offer.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Next time we're in Tom Green County, we're going to pop in and say hi.
Well, you better be ready for some Mexican food because that's what we're
I am. Okay. I'm always ready for Mexican food.
All right.
Lee's probably you got it. Huh?
I bet you're a vegetarian.
Who? How dare you?
No.
Anybody says it's like that, it's got to be a vegetarian.
Bull crap. I eat it all, Sheriff.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Salad and I are not friends. Yeah, I'm a meat eater, unfortunately, but yes, I've been my whole life. Anyway, so thank you all for listening, and Sheriff Hanna, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
of course, and until next time.